Emery, I knew this would be right up your alley. There's so much interesting to unpack about this story. I did a Tech News Today segment on it earlier this week, where we chatted about it for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And I'd love to spend some more time on it here today, because we barely scratched the surface of everything that is interesting about this. And we'll start at the beginning. The beginning is that Forbes managed to find in the dockets of the federal court close to Lancaster, California, record of a search warrant having been issued by a judge from that court in response to a request from the DOJ that allowed them to go into a residence. And as part of the various items that the warrant permitted law enforcement to search and seize, the warrant included the fingerprints of the owners of the various devices that were found on the premises, so that law enforcement would be able to unlock those devices if they were protected by biometric identification security. Forbes rightly thought this was interesting. In fact, to their and anyone else's knowledge, this seems to have been the first time that a request to fingerprint the occupants of premises for the purposes of unlocking any devices that were found there has been included in a warrant. Now, I mentioned that I found this interesting on so many levels. First of all, I find it incredibly interesting that Forbes is doing such a thoroughgoing job, or that journalists in general are doing such a thoroughgoing job of going through federal dockets and stumble, you know, examining every search warrant that is issued, because I imagine that's the only way they came across this. And maybe there are search filters in place that let them sort of sift and find the more interesting stuff. But I was kind of impressed that this surfaced at all. The warrant, in fact, it surfaced quite a while after this actually happened. The warrant was issued in May. So it did take some time for this to bubble into the public consciousness. The other thing that's interesting is that the investigation going on here is not a matter of public record. We don't know what kind of crime was being investigated. We don't know what these people, if they're accused of a crime, if they're perhaps percipient or non-percipient witnesses to some other suspected criminal activity. And the people themselves, although they spoke with Forbes, did not go into specifics either. They simply said, this is unfair. It shouldn't have happened to us. There never should have been a warrant served for our premises, and they left it at that. So with that background, there's much more to unpack, which we will continue to do. Emery, tell me about your thoughts on requesting fingerprints in a search warrant.
Yeah, it is obviously, like you said, just a really rabbit hole of an issue, I think. You know, I think it's a good idea to just read the exact language of the warrant just for our listeners and viewers. So the warrant authorization to depress the fingerprints and thumbprints of every person who is located at the subject premises during the execution of the search and who is reasonably believed by law enforcement to be the user of a fingerprint sensor enabled device that is located at the subject premise and falls within the scope of the warrant. So, yeah, where to start? I mean, on the security perspective, we've all known that, you know, fingerprints could be compelled before. You know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I think security experts don't recommend that you lock your device with your biometrics, because you can be forced to give those up. So far, at least, you can't really be forced to. Well, never mind. That's still working through. But courts are more reluctant to force you to give up a password than, you know, your thumbprint. And, you know, you can't change your thumbprint. And so the idea that, you know, this general warrant, because that's what it is, you know, the warrant, it doesn't exactly, you know, it is encased in a, you know, rather small paragraph. So you would think that it would be, you know, kind of particular. But, you know, it's basically saying every single person in this residence, we need their thumbprints because there might be information on their phones that we might want to, there might be evidence on their phones that we want to be able to access and maintain access to. I mean, it sounds like about as close to a general writ as you can get to me, you know, which is, again, what like the Fourth Amendment was directly, you know, supposed to, you know, push up against. So I don't know. It's alarming. It's scary. The fact that we don't know anything about the case, that it's, you know, not public record. You know, again, I'm surprised that this kind of surfaced at all. According to the Forbes article, the people that lived in the home, you know, aren't exactly excited to talk about it. You know, they don't want to, you know, they're just saying like, oh, we've never been, you know, suspected of a crime, but we just want this to, you know, be in our, you know, we want to move past this. I don't know. It's I don't know if I have a good, nice conclusion with a bow on it about how I feel about this. It is. Yeah. Sorry. You want to
One of the things I feel about this, I think you and I, Emery and Lisa, probably all have this sensation that maybe people outside the legal field don't have. And I think it's worth explicating to let people know how these things work. Lisa, the first thing that I thought of when I read this was how it is a great example of how the legal system is not black and white. It's fluid, and it's adversarial in nature. So even if the U.S. attorney here who decided to seek this warrant suspected that maybe a court might find this request unconstitutional, overbroad violation of the Fourth Amendment, that the way our system works is it's not really, I mean, unless they have absolute knowledge that, yeah, this is really overreaching and we've got authority and precedent that says we can't do this, they can run it up the flagpole and see what a judge does with it. And here, so first of all, the first component is you've got an attorney who's going to take a flyer on something. The second component in this process is you have a judge and you don't know what that judge's background in this area of the law is. You don't know what that judge's level of sleep for the day is. You know, you have no idea what the judge's process is for assessing and approving requested search warrants. There is a judge involved in that process, but judges issue search warrants all the time. And I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I suspect that they get into sort of a routine of, oh, I know this attorney, I know they're a reasonable person, or maybe I don't know this attorney, but I know this office, you know, doesn't tend to ask for outrageous things. And maybe the scrutiny that the judge put into it might not have been as strong as another judge on a different day. Are you buying into what I'm saying here as sort of the fluid nature of the legal process, and that it's not too surprising when things like this happen?
Oh, sure. I will give a pretty balanced comment on this. You know, I did work for the Department of Justice, and I did clerk there. And I was a clerk, but I reported to U.S. attorneys who had a great deal of prosecutorial discretion. I clerked for the district court. You know, it's a touchy subject. In general, the general public may not really be aware, other than by watching Saul Goodman on Breaking Bad or, you know, other TV portrayals of the limits of search and seizure. But on the one hand, prosecutors are required to keep the peace and exercise police power and protect all of our laws neutrally. Mm-hmm. And the danger for the government, and actually the danger for the public, is if there is overreaching in the executive function of going into someone's home and searching and seizing something on a novel theory, it could poison the entire investigation. It could poison the entire prosecution if later a much higher court, the Ninth Circuit or the U.S. Supreme Court, or even on habeas collateral attacks, suppose there was a conviction. Suppose there was a conviction of somebody based solely on evidence that the government was able to obtain under this questionable, novel, you know, sort of on the edges warrant. Mm-hmm. Now, Now, if that conviction is set aside after many years of costly proceedings in court by the government, by the defendant, by the defense lawyer, if that person's defense lawyer is too expensive than one that the government appoints to that defendant, I mean, one questions, I mean, is this a just and efficient and a speedy use of government and taxpayer resources? So, I mean, I would look at both sides of the issue. I mean, if you have a good probable cause to go in and seek evidence, what is really the public interest rationale in trying to go into someone's home to get fingerprint evidence that you could not have gotten outside of their home to unlock mm-hmm. their phone? I mean, if we all agree that people have a reasonable expectation of privacy inside their home, unless there's some compelling government reason or probable cause not to think that, and they're presenting an imminent harm to the community. And if we also agree that you could lock your phone with a password, that then what is so compelling to sort of go through both of those current understandings of privacy that you need to go into someone's home to get fingerprints? I mean, what's wrong with regular old gumshoe? Like, go dust their car, you know, go dust their doorknob.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people in the public may not know that when I got admitted to the California bar, you of course let your fingerprints been taken. And in general, no, there's not an expectation of privacy. If you're going to go out committing crimes and disturbing the peace, yeah, you can go get fingerprints. But here, I mean, pushing the limits in such a novel way with people's personal devices that may or may not have adequate passwords on it. To me, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty serious threat to the privilege against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment, as well as it opens a Pandora's box of concerns, constitutional concerns, that maybe there was an easier way for the government to get this. Maybe not. I don't know enough about the particular case or the reason why. But when the government is seen to exceed the boundaries, it can risk both the government's case as well as the defense.